Welcome to the South Cars Conference number 96140.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the TNT Open Forum for Thursday night, October 1st, 2009, or if you're on the other side of the world, it's Friday, October 2nd, also 2009, I would hope, on the other side of the planet. Welcome, everybody. South Cars TNT is a directed public service open forum whose aim is to share the collective knowledge with any and all who have an insatiable curiosity for all things, and hopefully that will be especially true tonight. We're a group of dynamic amateur radio enthusiasts who invite you to gather with us every Friday at 0030 Zulu on the SCARS conference server. You know the node, 96140 if you're connected, and IRLP reflector 9614. The Echolink node is made available, and as well as the IRLP reflector, made available by the Western Michigan privately owned repeater network. Here at this open forum, a different topic will be presented each week on any number of subjects of interest to you. Discussion period follows, as you know, and we invite you to give us your thoughts and comments on the topics at hand. All traffic will be handled through net control. That would be me, I guess. And the approximate duration of the target duration is 60 minutes, not to exceed 90 minutes. With that being said, apologies. I promise to entertain, to inform, and we promise to have fun. Your net control for this evening is Victor Echo 2 X-ray Papa Lima. My name is Pete. I'm located in beautiful Montreal, Canada, where the temperature is cool tonight, 7 degrees Celsius, approximately 45 Fahrenheit, under clear skies. The leaves are starting to change colors up here, and fall is upon us. And winter will be here soon. It's apple season up here, people, and the apples are really good. We went apple picking last weekend with the kids, and my God, there's nothing better than fresh fruit picked right off the tree. At this time, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or if there's anyone needing to contact the station, move off the server for their QSO. Negative on that. All right, this week's topic, actually this week's theme, we're going to be trying out something new. I've called it the Open Forum. I certainly invite all of you to write me with comments for a better name than that, because there's got to be something better than the Open Forum. And once I explain what it is, maybe you guys can give me some suggestions. We're going to have a panel-style discussion tonight, an Oprah Winfrey-style night, where I have a panel, which I will introduce shortly, and we will suggest topics. I will suggest different topics, and each panel member will be asked for his thoughts and comments on that topic. So we'll do one round of the round table, and then the second round will be the response or the rebuttals to that. After that, of course, the audience will be asked to chime in with their thoughts or comments. I've picked a whole bunch of themes of a more RF nature because last week and the week before we talked about VOIP, so I thought we'd give RF a chance this week. I'm pausing quite often as I'm changing papers quite often. So this week's panel will consist of myself, ZE2XPL, Pete, and in the order in which they accepted my invitation, Gordon, KY6V, John, W8RAT, and Jack, K4JAK, people who are all very well known to you. I'm just noticing in the text box, is the beep normal? Can someone give me a signal report and let me know if there is a beep in my transmission? Over.
Everything's clear on this end, sir.
Clear here as well.
All right, that's good to know. If KD4OVI, if you hear a beep, it's either in your system or perhaps in your head, but apparently it's not coming from me. I wouldn't be surprised if it was coming from me. The way this shack is set up sometimes, I wonder. Although it's not horrible, but we'll discuss that a little bit later on. All right. At this point, I will invite our three panel members to introduce themselves in turn. I'll call them one by one, and then we'll start with this evening's topics. First presenter is Gordon KY6V. Say hi to the nice people.
Hi, nice people. And hi to you, Pete. Hey, thanks for having me on the board here this evening. I will do my best, sir, to behave myself. And my name is Gordon, calls KY6V, and I'm down here with the palm trees in Central Florida. Go ahead, Pete.
All right. Well, thank you for being there, Gordon. Always happy to have you on board. Always interesting points of view indeed. One of the reasons that I invited you. And I had a palm tree in my backyard until about 3 weeks ago when the cold weather came. It's a little thing. It was cute, but it doesn't like the cold. So enjoy those palm trees indeed, because it's cold up here. Next in line, again, like I said, in order in which they accepted my invitation and in no way in any order of importance. John, W8RAT, come on aboard and say hi, sir.
Well, good evening, Pete, Gordon, and everyone on the net tonight. This is W8RAT. My name is John, and I'm down here in South Florida. And it's been a beautiful, beautiful afternoon. Last couple of days has cooled off a little bit, and boy, I love it. It's only a couple degrees, but it sure is better than what it's been. Back to you, Pete, W8RAT.
All right, roger that. I'm sorry, just poor Pete up there is having trouble asking for help. If someone can help Pete turn his beeps off in his head, I'm sure he'd be very appreciative. Sorry, Pete, I just couldn't resist. Our third panel member is Jack, K4JAK. Come on aboard, Jack. Say hello.
All right. Hello. Good evening, everybody. Everybody on the server tonight. Yeah, been a gorgeous day. It really has. I actually got the yard mode today, so that's nice. That way I won't have to do it for the weekend anyway. Let's see. Got 77.3 degrees, so... I think they said it's going to get down into the mid to lower 60s tonight. So, boy, really looking forward to that. Hopefully it'll be pretty cool in the morning when we get up. You know, well, cooler than what it has been. I mean, that's a big difference, you know. 69, 70 degrees, 89, 90. You know, yeah, it's kind of a difference. All right, we'll give it back to Pete there so we can get this thing rolling. K4JAK.
All right. Good. Gordon says turn off the computer, but we must not forget to tell him to turn it back on because we want him back here. We want his thoughts and comments a little later on, too. And I hope you get that solved, Pete. I'm sure it's not a big, big problem, but I'm sure you'll figure it out. All right. Well, that's our panel. You guys know all these nice gentlemen. They are all NCSs and COIP managers with South Cars, of course, very well known, and I'm happy to have you guys all on board. I think we'll have a very interesting discussion tonight. We'll try to keep it technical. I have invited people of various levels of expertise, of course, so we will have both sides of the coin. Well, at least as far as I'm concerned, I consider myself as somewhat of a newbie. I've personally been licensed since 1995, but I was only active for a little bit and then became inactive for a number of years and have only gotten back into the hobby about two years ago. So I still consider myself pretty new in the hobby, even though I've been licensed for a number of years. And, heck, you could be in the hobby for years and years and years and still consider yourself a newbie. There's always something to be learned, as I say very often, and that's one of the great things about this hobby. So with that, I'll start with the first of my Oprah-style questions. And it's a pretty simple question of a more less technical nature, although it can be. But I'm just going to go one by one and ask what drew you guys to ham radio, be it a technical reason or other. So we'll start with Gordon, KY6V.
Oh, you're going to put me in the box first. Shame on you, Pete. KY6V here. Well, I'm not sure that I was drawn into ham radio. I think I was forced into ham radio, Pete. I was born with a carbon microphone, for those who can remember carbon microphones, in one hand and a vacuum tube in the other. My father had been a licensed amateur since 1921. He started out with spark gap, et cetera, et cetera. I grew up with it. He was my Elmer. And I've been with it ever since, and never looked back, and I've had fun the whole time, Pete. KY6V, over.
Yeah, roger that. Very cool. Well, there's nothing better than having the built-in Elmer. A lot of us have very easy Elmers to get a hold of, but Nothing better than when he's under your own roof and he's your dad. That Elmer would have a special interest in his students, so that's great. John, W8RAT, you're up next. What drew you into this great hobby? Over.
Well, it started probably about 13 years old. I met up with a gentleman that was actually a ham operator, but he was also playing on CBs, and I met him over a CB and went to his house and saw all this old Yaesu equipment stacked one on top of each other and across the table. And I was just absolutely intrigued by that when I saw that equipment. And that kind of started the itch. And when I started getting a little older, I just did with CBs for several years, and I found girls, cars, and motorcycles, and kind of forgot about them for a long time. And now, about 2 years ago, a friend of mine bought a CB, him and his dad, so I had to have one. I'm like, you know what, man, I remember that stuff. And, well, one thing led to another. I started talking to some people at Hamfests, went over to Okeechobee, and met some of the guys in the Fort Pierce Amateur Radio Club here, and actually were some of the guys that I went to school with. And I was like, well, looky here. That is neat. But they started telling me, man, you know, this is what you ought to do, man. You know, try this. You know, get your ticket. And there's a whole lot more frequencies and a whole lot more places that you can go talk than just on 27 megahertz. I'm like, okay. So I looked into it, and sure enough, man, there's all kind of places you can actually go to, and all different times of the day you can talk. Uppers, lowers, you can, if one frequency in one band doesn't work for you, go somewhere else. So I got my tech, and I immediately realized that the few places that I could go with the tech was not enough, so I started studying for my general. And everyone else knows, I'm a new general. I'm only, I don't know, maybe what, 2 months maybe, Jack? But, man, absolutely loving it. And like Gordon says, it took me a while to get here, but not looking back. I'm only looking forward to what I can do next and what I can have next. Money working in against me, but, hey, we try and get what we can when we can. But that's what kind of drew me to it, just believe it or not, started out with some CBs, and there's just a lot more out there. Okay, so back to you, Pete, W8RAT.
Whoops, wrong button. All right, very good, John, thanks. Yeah, that's indeed, I also started out in CBs. I'll tell you a little bit more in a second, but Jack, come on aboard and tell us your story. Over to you.
Not much of a story. You know me, I can't tell stories anyway. I just know how that goes. But it was 30-some years ago, back in the early 70s, I got into CBs, of course, back when you had to be licensed to be in them, you know, had to have a license to run one. And through the local club we were in, got introduced to a couple other people that were also ham operators, and was over at one of the guys' house one night, and he was into the Yaesus. Nowadays they're old Yaesus. Back then they were brand new. And he had the whole 9-foot table full, packed full. You know, had the receiver, the transceiver, the extra receiver, you know, everything. Just, you know, he had one of those folding tables, you know. I call it 8-foot, 9-foot long table with the legs you drop down like you eat chicken on at your church social. And he had one of those just packed full of it. And that's what got me into it, got me interested anyway. But, and through the years, like John said, through the years, you know, other thing became priority and this and that, and I just kind of put it on the back burner, but always kept a CB, always kept that, had it for years. So hearing bells, yeah, okay, I hear the bells. you know, always had the CB, and even down here I've had the CB. I learned my antennas through the CB, through the 11 meter, which I like to build and work on antennas and this and that. So I have fun there. Then eventually here 2 years ago, take that back, a year ago in August, I took my test and got my ticket, and got my technician, and hey, been uphill ever since. In March of this year, I got my my general, so I got another step to go here. Don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I had a friend tell me that he's going to start studying for his extra. And this is going to interest you, John. Good old Virgil, when he was over today, told me he's going to start studying for his general. So, and that's basically what got me to get my my technician, my buddy Virgil. He got his, and I'm thinking, man, if he can do it, and he's dyslexic, and he has problems learning and retaining, well, I can sure get it. So that kind of helped me and pushed me right there. And that just that's about my story there, Pete, and we'll give it back to you, K4JAK.
All right. Well, a few similarities there, indeed. Thanks for sharing. I have a similar. I was not born into a ham family. I was born into a somewhat of a CB family. My dad wasn't around growing up. He died when I was very young. So young, in fact, that I don't remember him. So my mom rented an apartment in my uncle's duplex. And he was a CB-er, so for the longest time I got to play CB from the time I was about 6 or 7 until my teens. And of course, like many of you, I also discovered girls, cars, and bikes. Unfortunately for me, the girls did not discover me back, but that's another story. So the reason I got into ham radio was quite a fluke. I was in technical school studying to be an electrical engineering technologist. And one of our instructors, one of our teachers, was a ham radio operator. And after our second year, just before we're about to graduate, he said, you guys, if you want to be ham radio operators, you know all the techie stuff. So he says, I'll spend the day with you teaching you the ham rules and regulations and give you the exam. He was an examiner. And sure enough, we got our ticket. And it was just as easy as that for me. Like, I had a head start on people. Like I said, I didn't have to study the techie stuff. Well, I guess I did. I studied it over 2 years, though, and studying other things at the same time. So that was a little bit of fluke. And then I was active for about a year and then moved out west and moved into the Canadian Rockies and discovered mountains and discovered other neat things to do and kind of gave up the hobby at that point. Which is kind of too bad because there's a lot of 14,000 foot peaks there, which would have been great for an antenna, but that's all right. No regrets. And I've come back a few years ago just out of interest. So that's my quick story. So, gentlemen, thanks for sharing that. I'd love to hear. I always like to hear how people got started. And, we do lose some. We don't lose them, I'm sorry. It's hard to get some of those younger guys interested because of the girls, the cars, and the bikes. And don't get me wrong, girls and cars and bikes are fun, but I guess for a teenager, they don't compare to ham radio. But that's okay. We can discuss on a later show, maybe discuss ways of getting the young people involved. So let's move on to the second question. The second topic is also a topic of personal preference, but can be a little bit more technical. What's your favorite piece of equipment in your shack, and why is it your favorite piece of equipment? And we'll keep the round robin going in the same order, I guess. So we'll start with Gordon, then John, then Jack. And if you guys want to pick it up one after the other, you don't have to pass it back to me, and we'll make it a little bit more of a flow that way. So there you go. What's your favorite piece of gear, and why? So we'll start with Gordon.
Boy, Pete, that's a toughie. And incidentally, I didn't know that you were invited Oprah here, Winfrey. Here I sit in my cut-off shorts and Guamanian gook boots, and I should have a white shirt and tie on. I knew that question might be posed this evening, and I'm hard-pressed to answer it for you for a number of reasons. I've been a ham for so long, I've got an awful lot of equipment. As an example, I have a desk here that's a corner desk that's 6 feet across both sides with all of the drawers and slide-out keyboard accoutrements and so on. And on that desk, when I saw that question, I quickly counted all the equipment that's on the desk, and I came up with 35 pieces of equipment, Pete. And then you asked me, what is my favorite or my favorite mode? I'm capable of just about every mode that is used these days, from AM to sideband to digitalized packet, Amptor, Pactor, and on it goes. So if I was to answer this thing truly, I would have to look around and say, what do I use the most? Well, obviously, the first thing that I use the most, and therefore it must be my most interest, is the computer, and particularly the VOIP side with Southcars. A close second to that is my HF equipment, because I'm very active on 40 meters, although I have all-band capability. And then followed very closely to that would probably be my 2-meter radio. I like to say that I can work from DC to light in any mode they're in, and I'm pretty doggone close to that. So it's a tough question for me. But I guess I'd have to say the computer, number one, because of VOIP, HF, number two, and 2 meters, number three. If I'm not turning it back to our master of ceremonies, you would be the next in line, John Sound, KY6V to W8RAT. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Well, that is a very good question. I don't have many pieces, but I'm going to have to say that my favorite piece of equipment is probably my HF. I also like 40 meters. I am all over 40 meters from one end to the other. Yeah, this Yaesu 1000D that I have, I just absolutely love this thing. It is pretty. It's pristine. And I like it because I can go just about anywhere I want to with it. And with the 200 watts capabilities in the radio, that's just a big plus there. You don't really need anything else. Then I think after that would probably be this, the computer, the VOIP. I enjoy this, and in 2 meter also. I'm trying to get this 706 figured out, which I'm almost there now, and get that mounted in the truck so I can have all of that in the truck. That's nice having all of that in the vehicle, so you can talk HF if you want to, if you're sitting somewhere, and 2 meters real quick and easy. But I'm going to have to say that would be the order, the HF, the VOIP, and then probably my 2-meter. I like my 2-meter also for in the vehicle and being able to communicate with my wife. I got one in the car, I got one at home, and I got one that's going back in my truck now. The one that's in the car, my wife's car, is actually the one that was in my truck. I had to give her the real nice one. But anyway, that would probably be my order right there, W8RAT, and I guess we'll turn this over to K4JAK. Your turn, sir.
Well, thank you, John. Thank you. But we'll go ahead and let the cat out of the bag. The reason you gave her the other one was so you could buy a new one to put in your truck. We know. It's okay. It's okay. She knows it, too. Don't worry. my favorite piece of equipment has got to be my HF. I like my HF. I like my 40-meter. And like John, I'm all over the 40-meter, you know. I have a blast with it. I've got a Kenwood TS450S, which I think is my favorite as far as the HF radios go. I've got a big old ICOM sitting here, an old 765, which I like, don't get me wrong, but I like that. I do like the Kenwood. I enjoy it. I never I'm never disappointed with it, let's put it that way. Every time I key it up, I always get a comeback, which I love. It doesn't matter whether I'm on the vertical or on the wire. And I don't run power. I have it if I want to run it, but I don't. I prefer making my connections just with the radio itself, because that tells me when you can do that, then your equipment's working good, your antennas are set right, you know, that's when I get to feeling good. I mean, yeah, I can turn it on if I have to, but, you know, what's the use if you don't have to? And then second would have to be the VOIP here, the computer. And me never being exposed to computers up until last year when I bought this one, just for the Echolink aspect of it for the ham radio. So I think I'm learning slowly but surely, but I'm enjoying it. And then comes the 2 meter, and then I've got the I also have the 706 out in the truck, which I do. Like I said, I enjoy my 40 meter. I really do. And with that said, I will give it back to Mr. Pete, VE2XPL from K4JAK.
All right, Roger that. Well, the idea was certainly to challenge you guys. You seem to be hard-pressed to give me an answer. So you guys are giving me all the answers. You guys are cheating. Ask for one piece of gear. What's your favorite? But that's all right. We'll keep it going. I'm just pulling on your pant legs, guys. Excellent answers. Gordon, VOIP, HF, and 2 meter. John and Jack agree, HF, VOIP, and 2 meter in that order. My favorite piece of gear, and I'll go with two. My favorite piece of gear is a vintage Stromberg Carlson AM receiver. It's a tube receiver, approximately 1940s, broadcast AM, and 15 to 50 meters. I like it because it was given to me, actually, a lady friend of ours, a family friend, a lady friend. Well, that doesn't sound right, does it? A family friend of ours bought a new house, a very old house in an older neighborhood in Montreal. And this thing was sitting in her basement, and it was in the wall, and it still worked. She ripped it out, and she was going to throw it away. She thought it was a piece of junk, and I just happened to be there the right day at the right time. I was having dinner with my family. She'd invited us for a sort of housewarming. She showed me this piece of gear. I knew that I was a techie at the hospital. It's the lady that works with us at the hospital. And asked me if it was worth anything and if I wanted it. She said, if you don't want it, I'm going to throw it in the garbage. Well, you know, he didn't have to coax me. It was in my car that very same afternoon, and it works. There's no backing on it, of course, because it was a wall-mounted unit, which I thought was interesting. But other than that, it was in pristine shape, and I tune it up every once in a while. You know, the string probably needs a bit of changing because doesn't stick, but it slips once in a while, and it's another piece of gear that I need to learn about, that I need to learn how to troubleshoot and fix. Of course, being conscious that tubes carry much, much more voltage than transistors, so I am being quite careful, especially because it's got no back. Just pause to reset everything. And my second piece of gear is this little teeny tiny audio mixer here that I use for different sound effects, just because it's fun, and I get to do stuff like that once in a while. So those are my two pieces of gear. And with that, I will throw it into the third question. Let's see. Basic grounding equipment. Do you guys ground your equipment? Do you ground your antennas? And what do you do for basic shack safety? What are your requirements at home? Again, round robin, Gordon, John, and then Jack. Let's hear it, gentlemen.
Well, I'll tell you what, Pete, that's a couple of quick questions that could require just hours to explain. KY6V here. I think I'd like to open this up for comments from both John and Jack and yourself about the statement that ground is not ground the world around. Let me say that again. Ground is not ground the world around. And what that means is some good technical reasons of the difference between RF grounds and commercial power type grounds. You have to realize that the longer the wire, or if the wire length that you think you're setting up for a ground, out to a ground rod outside or whatever, is an integral length of a quarter wave or a half wave, that baby's going to radiate on you as an antenna if you are indeed transmitting on that resonant frequency. So you got to do some tricks of the game to get around that. But basically, I ground everything in the shack. I use a flat braid. It's about an inch and a quarter wide and copper. And each piece of equipment is grounded together. It runs outside to a ground rod just outside the radio room window that's 10 feet in the ground. It is then coupled with more braid from that ground rod to the AC ground rod, the commercial power ground rod, at my incoming meter and distribution panel, if you will. And then I go to overkill. I turn around and I run another copper strap clear over to the well and tie that onto the well itself, and I've got a ground that's a ground. Let me buy a nickel here for a moment. I'm going to let Jack talk about safety features, but the biggest thing, guys and gals, is don't take any shortcuts. Don't try and cut that third safety ground pin off of the three-pin plug so that you can stick the two prongs into a two-prong connector in the wall, socket in the wall, or a two-prong AC cord. You don't have the problem these days that you had in the good old days when they had what they called AC-DC radios. And in those days, you could turn your plug around when there was only two plugs or two prongs on your socket, and all of a sudden your chassis was the hot side and everything else was the cold side. And if you were standing in the bathtub and reaching for the radio, watch out. So don't take shortcuts. Do it right. Do it the code. If you don't know what the code is, ask somebody that does. John, over to you, sir. W8H, or R8T, and the group KY6V.
Well, I don't have anything as far as a radio in my shack grounded to a ground rod. And I was just looking on the back of that 1000, and it's got a big old wing nut ground back there. So that's something I'll have to look at doing. Antennas, yes. All of my antennas are grounded with a 10-foot ground rod. All of them are... The tower is actually grounded, but as far as a ground on my radios, to be honest, I don't have anything grounded on them right yet. But it sounds like a good thing to do, so that's something that I'll put on my list of things to do. So with that said, I don't have a whole lot more with that because everybody knows that I don't have anything grounded at this point. But that'll change here real soon. All right, W8RAT. It's going to turn it over to Jack, K4JAK, the man who knows.
Well, knowing and doing is two different things. I don't have any interior equipment grounded. Except what plugs into the wall there. I did not cut my third leg off, I have not cut my third leg off. It's plugged into the wall. My house ground is fine, my electrical system there. So the power wise is grounded through there, but as far as the individual chassis of my equipment, no, I don't have that grounded. Now my antennas are grounded, towers are grounded, all that out there is done, but as far as in the house, no, it's not grounded. I'm getting ready to, but I haven't yet. I'm going to buy one of the big bonding plates. It's about a 8-inch by 16-inch piece of copper. It's got all the holes in it for the different type of ground lugs. With the standoff brackets and insulators, which I'm going to put under the table here. And then everything will be run to that and put in that way. And then it'll run outside to a separate ground rod on its own, which I will not tie into my electrical ground system. They should be kept separate. I know a lot of people do tie them in together, but I will keep it separate because I don't want to pick up anything off of the electrical system. I don't want to pick up any hum or interfere with anything, which it can be. Now, what I will do here with my grounding system, once I get it ready to go inside, it will be a short run out the window to the ground rod, and then I will put a total of 3 ground rods in, about 10 foot apart, in a triangle. And I will tie those together, and then that will be my grounding system, just for the inside materials. Probably overkill, but I kind of want it that way, you know. Plus, I pick up a lot of noise here from the power lines and from a transformer over here on the pole, depending on which way I have my beams pointed. And it'll help alleviate quite a bit of that, quite a bit of the ground noise also. All right, and we'll give it back to Pete there. K4JAK.
W4RFJ Mobile.
N4ZI.
Okay, roger that. I do acknowledge the two stations that have come in through the Newtown Square link, W4RF. I wrote RFS, but I don't think that's what I heard. And N4ZII. Do either of you gentlemen have any questions at this point? Over.
W4RFJ with a comment. Good evening to everybody.
That's what I heard. W4RFJ. You'd think I'd know better. It's not like it's the first time you've checked in. All right, come on aboard with your question, sir. South Cars TNT.
Okay, very good. Good evening, everybody. I heard Gordon and Jack, and I just wanted to make a quick comment, and Jack kind of hit the nail on the head. You should keep your station ground separate as much as you can from your utilities ground. The basic reason for that is you can get a big difference in potential between the two. And I know that some people don't use them, but an isolation transformer comes in handy too to provide that isolation from your house ground. So anyway, just wanted to throw my two cents in there and say good evening to everybody. It's a pleasure to hear everybody in here. This is W4RFJ back to Net Control.
Roger that. Roger, W4RFJ in Ridley Park, Pennsylvania, a regular here on South Cars. And we appreciate your comments. This is the open forum, so I'm more than happy that you jumped in, and a very valid point indeed. And I'm going to have a show scheduled. I'm not sure what the date's going to be, but we're going to be talking about shack safety and grounding because it's very basic information. A lot of people don't necessarily get that information unless they seek it out. And it's not something that's actively talked about, and it's a little, you know, there's some misunderstandings around grounding. So I'm glad that you jumped in there and added that, and I appreciate the other three gentlemen's comments as well. So that's very important. I also do not ground my equipment in the shack presently. I plan on doing it. My shack is forever changing, and I'm looking at getting some more power in here. And when I do, I want to get a ground bar and ground all my equipment together inside. My antenna outside, both my antennas are grounded into the water pipes, which go into the ground. Not perfect, but for now, that's the way I have it. And I also do not cut the ground prong off of the AC connector. That's a big no-no indeed. And I highly recommend that nobody do that. You can get these little adapters that'll go from 3 to 2 if you have to, and the adapter actually has a ground pin sticking out on it so that you can ground your equipment properly as well. But it's better to plug things, plug 2-prong things into 2-prong plugs and 3-prong things into 3-prong plugs and respect the order, the natural order of things. So with that, I'll see if N4ZII has a question or a comment. Come on aboard.
Hi, yes, sir. This is interesting. Radio equipment. Very interesting. Yeah, we're just going to sit back and listen. We just wanted to say good evening to the net, and we just wanted to check in.
Yeah, roger that. Sorry, I got to find the PTT. Okay, well, thanks a lot, Joe. We appreciate you checking in, and if you have any questions in there, don't be afraid to pipe in. We'd be glad to field any questions or comments, of course. So, all right, well, we'll put a next to that topic, indeed, and I think that's a definite things to think about for a future show, and I will make that happen pretty soon. Next on my list of things to ask is CW requirements. Here can be a controversial topic at times. This is more of a personal opinion thing. Do you think CW, carrier wave, Morse code, of course, should still be a requirement for licensing? And if so, why? And if not, why? So again, we'll start with Gordon, KY6V, over to John, W8RAT, and Jack, K4JAK. This is Pete, VE2XPL, with the TNT Open Forum. And over to you, Gordon.
Well, I can sure be a controversial subject. Dug on your buttons. Hi to Roger and Joe up there and the rest of the guys that are connected here. Gordon, KY6V. Well, let me tell you where I was at one point and where I am now in answer to your question. I grew up with a Viberplex in one hand and a J straight key in the other. My father was capable of over 80 words a minute on CW, and I, at my prime, was running 55 to 60. I worked an awful lot of CW. When the turn of events came that they said they're going to start dropping the requirement for CW speed to a lower speed and then eventually drop it completely, I just went bananas. And I went bananas for the reason that I felt that it was going to open the door for a lot of people to become hams that were maybe not of the desirable type to keep the ham fraternity going in the manner that it was going. And I was very strong on this point. I changed my mind because within the first year that this change had taken place, The class of people that were coming aboard were so pleasant, so well educated. We were getting engineers and doctors and engine chiefs that were all contributing greatly to the hobby, and they didn't have to pass the code to get in. So I was wrong in my original position, but boy, I was full of fire and brimstone in those early days, I'll tell you that. Over to you, John, W8RAT from KY6V, over.
Well, I haven't been a ham long enough to understand, but I do understand your point in the beginning, and I do understand your point at the end there. It would probably, I would probably still not be a ham at this point, trying to learn CW. Now, with that said, it is something that I want to learn, okay? It is something that I want to learn because I'm intrigued by it, and I want to know at least some. I want to be able to do something in the CW area, so that's something I'm going to look into shortly. And learn some of. But like you said, there's so many people that I've met on the radio and on VOIP that are just absolutely pleasant people to talk to. And yes, you know, you get some of the older gentlemen that will give you a hard time once in a while, but as far as that's concerned, you're going to get that in anything that you do. So I enjoy it. I'm glad that I was able to I'm glad that I was able to become a amateur radio operator And I am absolutely enjoying it 100%. And should it be still required? I'm probably going to have to say that my opinion would be I like it the way it is, because you do get a lot of people coming in, young people, middle-aged like myself, elderly people. Everybody can get in there. And then if they decide that they, like me, would like to learn some of it, then that's good. So I say that I like it the way it is. That's just my opinion, of course, and like you said, yes, it could be very controversial. Okay, well, I'm going to turn this over to Jack, K4, J-A-K. What's your opinion, sir?
I like it the way it is. I'm like you. Had it not been for them doing away with the requirement for the CW, I probably wouldn't be licensed now. It's hard for me to discern the tones, the differences. So that would have held me back right there. And I've given it thought. I'm interested in it. And now I can study it at my own time, at my own speed, and not have to worry about, okay, I've got to have this and this and this in order to get my license. The pressure there. So I like it the way it is. I think it took a lot of the pressure off, and I agree with both you guys. The quality of people coming in are amazing. I mean, yeah, you're going to get a percentage of the worthless. We'll just go ahead and spit it out, you know. But all in all, the majority is just 99.9% have just been amazing. Like you said, they're educated, they're intelligent. They're great people to talk to. I learn from them every day that I'm on here. I learn something new every day. Just the way it is, you know, and I'm happy with it. But yeah, had it not been for them doing away with the code, I probably wouldn't have my ticket today. But I think they should leave it the way it is. And I agree with John there, you know, because you're going to it's part of the aspect of being an amateur radio operator is the CW. And I think if you're serious enough about what you're doing, you're going to want to know at least a little bit of all facets of your hobby. And even if it's difficult for you to learn or hard to pick up, at least you don't have to have it to get your license, which means the pressure's off. And when the pressure's off, I find it a whole lot easier to study and learn. So I think you'll get more operators in the long run by doing it this way. I really do, as far as the CW goes. K4JAK, I'll give it back to Pete, VE2XPL.
W4RFJ.
All right, come on aboard, W4RFJ, with your comment.
Well, I got to tell you, we've been sitting here in the car. We're on our way home from an amateur radio club meeting, and I've got JR, KB4MHL with Charlotte and I. And I agree with JR. You know, it used to be more of a rite of passage. And I remember putting my nose to the grind to get that 13 words a minute. And I'll tell you something, I really thought that doing away with the code was going to be doing away with the hobby. But I was proven wrong. I was one of those guys that thought that doing away with Morse code was going to mess up the hobby. And you gotta admit it, just like Gordon said, you gotta admit it when you're wrong. I've been proven wrong. I've seen more hams get in the hobby without the code, doing more code than I ever did in my lifetime. So my hat's off to the people that do stay with the code. And that's what I got to say about it. I was basically learned a lesson. Don't ever assume that you know what's best for the hobby. With the self-policed hobby or service, we're gonna promote getting those good people in there. And I agree with everybody. It's been a great pleasure meeting a lot of the new hands that have actually joined us here. So, Pete, thanks for allowing me to add my two cents. And by the way, Gordon, the Admiral says hi. W4RJ, back to Tech Control.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Roger. Appreciate your comments. Indeed. Yeah, it's always been an interesting topic for me. I also would probably not have chosen to become a ham if it wasn't for CW. If CW was required, CW has not been required here for much longer than in the U.S. I was licensed in 95, and it was not required back then. And I got my advanced license right off the bat because I had studied to be a techie, so the techie stuff was the easy part. So no CW requirements. However, I now have a want to learn. I mean, I think that it's now with no CW requirements, the people who learn CW do it because they want to and not because they have to. I think that's more pleasant. And I think that will obviously, you know, attract a lot more people. A good way to get people involved in a hobby, and like you say, most people are great, great people to talk to. As Jack says, you do get some less desirable people, but you get that in any group, whether you're a ham or whether you're a photographer or whether you're a guy in the park. You know, there's always going to be somebody out there who ruins it for everybody else in any hobby. It's the same for, you know, kids skateboarding. Most of them are great, and a few bad apples. That's just the way it goes, and you know, that's any hobby. You know, change is always difficult, indeed, but it has seemed to have been an okay thing for most people. Of course, it's a matter of opinion. You know, there's no right or wrong answer, I don't think. If any of you are interested, there's a great website which I'm putting into the text box right now, http://lcwo.net, learncwonline.net. And that is a great interactive way to learn your CW. And I've been in there for a few weeks now. And it's really, really fun, and it's an easy way to learn. You do 10, 15 minutes every day if you can, and you'll pick it up quite fast. So I'm also working towards getting some CW under my belt. At this point, I was just wondering, does anybody else in the South Cars community out there, anybody else have this seems to be an interesting topic for discussion. So let's see if anybody else has any opinions on this subject. CW, yes or no for licensing requirements. Come on aboard the South Cars. The next question. I'm actually going to skip the next question because it's almost like the first question. Favorite modes of operation, and that was touched on. And the time is proceeding, so I'm going to go move on right ahead. Another interesting topic, which will be basic rules of etiquette in ham radio operation, past and present. Are we going uphill or down? So once again, Gordon, John, and Jack, give us your opinions.
I guess I'm probably the starter on that, huh? Thank you, Pete. KY6V here. I think that we're improving, to be very frank with you. I think we're becoming more civilized. We've got some bumps in the road. We have some challenges of different schools of thought and different habits as some of the other services are melted in with ham radio, and there's a little of an adjustment period. But, you know, to me, this is a great hobby, and if you are a person who tries to be friendly and kind and respective, you're going to get $1 million back because of it. What's the old saying, you know, treat others as you would have them treat you. And if you remember this philosophy, everything is just going to be great. There are some subjects, CW excluded, that can be very controversial when aired in a round table. And through the years, I have seen some of these things almost get into fisticuffs. Now, there's a word for you tonight, Pete. Fisticuffs. You know, try and stay away from the controversial stuff because it will get heated and people's personalities will show. It's just not a pleasant thing if it goes too far. Just have fun and make sure that the people you're talking with are having fun too. Down to you, John, W8RAT from KY6V.
W8RAT. That's what I. That's what I'm all about. And if anybody's ever talked to me on the radio or VOIP, I am absolutely 100% non-confrontational. I love to have fun. And yes, the rules for the etiquette ham operation. I think. I think I haven't been in it long, but I think we're going in the right direction because I have only ran into, I think, in 6-7 months that I've been a amateur radio operator, I've only ran into two people that's given me any grief. So, like you said, if you treat people with respect, that's what you'll get back. 99.9% of the time, and that's the way I am. That's my whole train of thought, is you treat people the way you want to be treated, and believe me, I like being treated nice. I like to have fun with people, and Jack will second that, but treat people the way you want to be treated, and everything is absolutely beautiful, and you shouldn't have any problems, and if you do, well, then it's not a big deal. I'm going to turn this over to K4JAK and let Jack have a little say on it, W8RAT.
Well, I don't really have anything bad to say about it. What can you say bad? You know, it's great. Everybody's fantastic. You know, it's just great. It goes back to the way I was brought up, respect. You know, you respect everybody, everything. You know, you treat people the way you want to be treated, which is what happens here. You know, and like I said earlier, you know, once in a while you get to, you know, the problem child, whatever in there, you know. But you just gotta work around them. You can't let them get under your skin. You gotta stay focused. You gotta stay cool. You gotta stay mellow. This is great. I love it. You know, yeah, I've had a couple controversial roundtables going on here, but I was kicked back and enjoying it. It was fun. I did enjoy it, but you know, it gets that way. It, you know, I like to get them going and kick back and watch it roll. But yeah, John, that's right. He knows. He knows how it goes there, but. Yeah, I think it's going good, though. I like I said, I like the mannerisms. I like the etiquette. You know, to the point, it's not sickening, but it's right is right is what it amounts to, you know. Just like what we're doing here. It's a set order, but it's a blast. You know, it's a directed net, but we're having fun, you know. No, I don't have a brain, Pete. I lost mine a while back, you know. I was behind the door when God handed them out, and I thought he said trains, and I said I already had one, so I don't have one anymore. But, you know, like I said, I have fun with it. I enjoy it, and that's what it's all about. I was taught, you know, from the get-go, you treat people the way you want to be treated, and that's what I've always done. I've always been that way, and I always will be. So with that said, we'll give it back to Mr. Pete, and he can open it up for other discussions or continue to the next question. seeing as how he's the man in charge, it's his choice. K4JAK, back to VE2XPL.
All right. Thanks, gentlemen. No, there seems to be a uniformity and unanimous. I'll leave it at that. Everybody's of the same opinion, and that's great. You have to respect the golden rule, of course. Do on to others. Pete, KD4OVI, come on aboard.
Thank you very much, Pete. I'm in control from Montreal. VE2XPL, KD4 Oscar Lincoln. Yeah, you got to have etiquette. You can't let the mice run rampant. You need to follow the we all took the test. We all know what's expected of us. And we need to have that golden rule confirmed in our training. And as long as you follow the golden rule, I don't think you have a problem. So you have to have a heart. You have to have forgiveness. Mainly it's forgiveness. That's the best thing you can have in your conversation is forgiveness. And don't start weighing things with oranges and apples. That's no way to run a show. Pete, you're doing a marvelous job, by the way, from KD4 Oscar Lake, India.
Roger that, Pete. Thanks. Thanks for the kind words and thanks for the comments. Indeed, respect for others is key, and the golden rule, you know, do unto others. I couldn't agree more. And I haven't run into any major difficulties. Sometimes people are a little bit more difficult than others, but that's just a matter of perception, isn't it? If I perceive someone as very difficult, that doesn't mean that Pete or John or Jack or Gordon will. My tolerance may be different than somebody else's, and thus that's why we have to be very accepting. And I think for the most part, we as a ham radio community stick together. We all have this great hobby that pulls us together, so I think that certainly helps in keeping things civil. So I will open it up. I don't know if there's anybody else out there who has any comments about this. Come on aboard to South Cars TNT now.
U4RFJ.
All right, excellent. I'm making you an honorary panel member, Roger. Come on aboard with your comments.
Okay, Pete. Yeah, I kind of agree with everybody, but, you know, there's something I wanted to comment on. I think amateur radio in the past and present, and I believe it'll carry on into the future, has this thing called an Elmer. And I know my Elmer taught me my morals. As I got into the hobby, as I was learning, pass those tests, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think as long as we have hams training new hams, that etiquette's going to come right along with it. And I think that's why we still maintain a high caliber of amateur radio operator due to that. Most hams that I've met, both old and new, are receptive to discussion on etiquette and operation and rules, et cetera, et cetera. And such as Gordon said, you know, we've been on a learning curve with all the changes in communication standards and requirements that we actually have made happen in the amateur radio community to support emergency communication. So I just wanted to throw that point in there. You know, the Elmer is alive and well, and the more people, I think he who Elmers the most hams will win, you know. So back to you, Pete, and thank you very much for allowing me to join W4RFJ.
Oh, roger that. Open forum, that's what it's all about. I'm ecstatic, more than happy to have you with your comments. And that's a very, very valid point indeed, the Elmer. How can we forget the Elmer? Where would any of us be without the Elmer? I don't have one Elmer. I have several Elmers, so I guess I consider myself fortunate. I have a pool of people, great resources that I can rely on, and those values were instilled upon me very young by my parents, of course. That comes from basic growing up, and also You know, that carries on into ham radio. And my Elmers have made sure, you know, they always made sure to tell me that, you know, you got to be nice. And indeed, Elmering, like you say, he who Elmers, I like that. He who Elmers the most hams wins. And isn't that correct? A gentleman, I listened to a podcast called Solder Smoke. www.soldersmoke.com if anyone's interested. A podcast every 2 weeks about our hobby. Very interesting, very technical, very heavy on the homebrew side if you guys are into that. But this gentleman says that you have to be helpful. You know, hams have to be helpful of other hams, and hams have to be especially helpful to newcomers, and that's where Elmering comes in. So I thank Bill Meir, M0HBR, for that little pearl of wisdom. So does anybody else have any comments on the subject of Elmering and etiquette on the air? Come on aboard to South Cars TNT.
Name my Charlie Bravo.
Well, look at that. Suffix only, just the way it should be. Shame on me for not... not saying that in the beginning. But I have no rules here. This is an open forum. So come on aboard, LCB. Give us your comments, sir. Welcome aboard, TNT.
Well, good evening to everyone. Roger, and give Miss Charlotte a hug for myself and Mr. Gordon in the text box. Pete, you know, I'm pretty much a listener at times. I'll say something every once in a while, but I kind of feel, go with the consensus, you know, as Gordon says, the golden rule. And you, like, you're going to get what you give out. So, you know, and there's some band spectrum that I stay away from because, you know, I never grew up in that environment where there was, you know, so much hate and discontent amongst people there. And, you know, we do have that on the different bands. But it goes with the other old saying, birds of a feather flock together there. So we're not of that flock, so we stay away from it. And the same thing now as comes to the computer. There's a whole bunch out there, different nets that, you know, there's no consideration. Let me grab five. Don't want to do it again. Gordon passed out one award to me either today or yesterday, but whenever, you know, we don't have it here. I know when we first started playing Echolink in our area amongst the people in our area, set up the links and all. We had a good group, like-minded people, courteous, would get out of their bed and drive 100, 200 miles, whatever they had to do to help you out. And that's the kind of world that I enjoy being part of. Someone can teach you something, and someone that might learn something from you, and this is why, you know, I kind of enjoy this hobby there. With that, I spoke enough for one night, so KW4LCB.
Very good. Well, thanks for your comments, George. Always appreciated. Nice to have you on board, and yeah, you're more than welcome to listen, and you're more than welcome to speak up when you feel the need. So thanks for your comments, and again, I agree. We seem to have we have a lot of valid points, and we have certainly a consensus on this point. So maybe I'll move on. Time is flying. I'm only halfway through the list of questions that I didn't think I'd have enough questions, but these are stimulating more discussion than I thought, and that's great. So let's move right along, and if we don't go through the whole list, we'll do it again another time. So on my list of questions, here's another one. Emergency preparedness. Have you? This is not necessarily radio related, but can be. It's more of a general question. Emergency preparedness plan. Do you have one for yourself and your family? For your ham radio activities, and if so, have you tested it out in a real or simulated situation? So we will go to Gordon, KY6V, then John, W8RIT, then Jack, K4JAK. Come on aboard, Gordon.
Well, you got some great questions going here tonight, Pete. Thank you, KY6V. Well, I've been on both sides of the street. I've been in some real emergency handling situations, and on the other side, preparing for that day that one's going to come. I, as an example, have a charged 12-volt battery. If I lose commercial power, it can take me just a couple of minutes to be airborne as far as HF, VHF, or UHF. That's capable of a trickle charger when commercial power is available. I have an automobile that will talk from DC to light, HF, VHF, and UHF. If nothing else, I pull the car up next to the house and I turn on the engine and I start talking. So I think preparedness is very important. Roger may have some comments on this. He's very much into the emergency preparedness and coordination area up there in Pennsylvania. I can tell you that I lived through Hurricane Andrew down in Miami. And we were it, guys and gals. We were it. Nobody else could talk. They couldn't squawk worth a toot. All the towers were down in South Florida, down south of Miami proper. The police had no communication. The fire guys had no communication. And then they called in the National Guard, and they couldn't communicate. And it was the hams that pulled this thing all together. I was running out of my motorhome, and I had all kinds of radios in the motorhome. It was like the battleship Iowa. Had my own tower that was mounted on the motorhome. And I'll tell you what, we had generators squawking, and we were doing nothing but holding it together. So think about this. Be prepared. It's important. If nothing more than being able to get out in your car and fire up your mobile installation and squawk. W8RAT in the group from KY6V. Over.
Well, thank you, Gordon. Yeah, well, that's kind of the reason that I went with this 706 in the truck, or am fixing to put it in the truck. Because it has all that capabilities also. I am now a member of the EOC here in St. Lucie County, and have been learning a lot about the Emergency Operations Center and how it works, and what to do in times of emergency. There's a lot of learning to do. So, the preparedness is definitely most important. I mean, we went through, four hurricanes in 1 year here in St. Lucie County. The two that come right through and actually entered the southeast side of Florida within a mile of each other, absolutely unheard of. History, no time in history has any hurricanes ever done that before. Followed the same path within a mile, and it come right through St. Lucie County. So preparedness is definitely key. I wished I was an amateur radio operator back then, because, like you said, nobody could talk. Nobody. I had Nextel at the time. Nothing. It was absolutely dead. And it would have been nice to be able to help out the Emergency Operations Center and, to be able to communicate with the law enforcement, fire rescue, so on and so forth. But, yes, definitely being prepared is key, and learning the things to do and how to actually go about executing emergency operations is also key, and that's something that I'm hoping to learn a lot of here real soon. So, this whole entity of amateur radio is just really, really intriguing me, and I am absolutely looking forward to learning everything that I can learn to be prepared. So I'm going to let that go, and I'm going to turn it over to K4JAK, Mr. Jack, W8RAT.
Thank you, John. Yeah, as far as prepared, we're prepared here. Like I said, we were here for Francis and Jean and Wilma and George. Yeah, but and then again, you know, here I've got two crank-up towers is what I have up, and I cranked them down, of course, took the antennas off, put them in a shed. Didn't lay the towers down, just cranked them down. They're attached to the house, two different points, but they are attached. So they stayed up. Afterwards, put the antennas back on, and I wasn't a ham at the time, just still a CB, but put the antenna back on, cranked it up, and was talking. You know, I have a battery, as Gordon does, you know. And brought that out, stuck it in there, you know, plus backed the car up. And what I did with that was backed the truck up and just backed it up into the carport and took the coax out, laid it out the window, and had the ground plane up on the tower, cranked it up, and plugged the coax into the vehicle and talked that way. But, yeah, I was communicating afterwards. So there wasn't many of us out there, but there was a few. I know my buddy Rick up in Lakewood Park, he went for – I think he said he walked for a quarter mile or half a mile down the canal picking up his elements that were stuck in the ground off his stacked fours that are up there in the air. But, you know, they're rebuilt and back up in the air. But, like I said, that's about it, though. But, yeah, we're prepared. I mean, there's only so much you can do anyway, and chances are anything comes through that was bigger than Francis or Gene, and we're going to pack up and leave anyway and come back when it's all over. So, you know, like I said, we'll have enough warning. Antennas will be down. Towers will be cranked down. Everything will be put away. Anything that's not going with us will be covered. And I also have a 706 in the truck, so I have all the frequency capability, all the band capability. So there will be communication there. That's not a problem. And let me go ahead and give it back to Mr. Pete. I also see I see Mr. KY6Z has a comment. So let me give it back to Pete, and we'll let him carry on from there, K4JAK to VE2XPL.
Yeah, okay, roger that. Yeah, come on aboard with your comment, Gordon, KY6V.
Yeah, thanks, guys. KY6V, I just want to touch on something that John touched on. You know, this is a two-way street. Preparedness and being able to talk is only half of the game. The other half, and a very, very important half, is to know how to handle yourself in an emergency situation. Do you, as an example, know how to handle formal traffic? Are you familiar with ARRL message traffic format? Secondly, are you, and I know a lot of the guys that I'm talking to here at the moment are, but a lot may not be, are you trained in net operation? Can you act as an NCS? Do you know when to shut up and not talk? These are all important because you get a bunch of guys that are all willing to help, want to help, and don't know how to help, and you get more confusion going than the situation can handle. You don't talk unless you're called on, and when you're called on, be specific and get out of the way. Go ahead, Pete, KY6V, over.
Yeah, roger that. No, that's a great, great point indeed. I know that I know how to NCS. I'm not sure that I know how to NCS during an emergency. I have not formally started that training, although I'm in the process of doing that shortly. Indeed, I will I see there's a comment here from W4RFJ, so come on aboard, roger. To South Cars TNG.
Okay, first of all, I apologize, everybody. Miss Charlotte and I were in the car, and I've been scurrying to get the laptop set up. Are we sounding okay, Pete?
Yeah, roger that. 5x9, carry on.
Okay, I apologize profusely because, as Gordon said, yeah, I'm a heavy hitter when it comes to emergency communications. I am involved with the local amateur radio emergency service. I am probably the first ever appointed assistant district emergency coordinator for District 1 of EPA. And I got to agree with Gordon. You know, there's a big difference between net controlling a station under normal net occurrences and actually handling a net in an emergency. And I think the biggest thing that I get out of the emergency service or being prepared is, you know, you get the training that you need to interface the services that are there for the community. Just to give you an example, I mean, we learned through Katrina as is one of them, and I think the Floyd was another one. Hams made the communications happen, and that was learned prior to that was learned through lessons learned and the training that has been made available to hams from FEMA, from ARRL. There's all kinds of stuff there that people just don't really realize. They know that the emergency communications is there, but you got to become one with the ordeal, so to speak. And I can't stress enough, like Gordon says, having battery backup or some form of communications. Ever since I've gotten into the hobby, I have learned from experience that I can get information to protect me and my family and my local neighbors quicker through amateur radio than I can get it from any other means. And, you know, having information is the most important thing, is getting that information and being able to react to it in a timely manner can save lives. So, Pete, I'll pass it back over to you, and I know Miss Charlotte, KA3TEJ, would like to make a comment. Over.
Oh, very cool. Well, thanks for your words of wisdom, indeed, from a man with experience. And perhaps when the time comes, I'll invite you to speak at one of these open forums. That'd be really cool. And Miss Charlotte, come on aboard with your comments. Welcome to South Cars TNT.
Thank you, Pete. As Roger said, we were in the car and we were hurrying to get in the house and get the computer set up so we could get back on the net here. So I hope we're still talking about the original question that I heard in the car was, do you have an emergency preparedness plan and have you practiced it? I am in the process of researching emergency preparedness information, most of it from the internet, getting a kit ready, working on radio backup, that kind of stuff. Roger, we're rebuilding our ham station right now, so we don't even have a radio set up in the house at the moment, but we will have backup for that. And just to answer the question, did we have a plan in place? We personally are working on it. And as Roger said, we have, what's the name of that other radio? The FRS radios. We're working on FRS radios, too, to communicate with the neighbors should there be an emergency. So that's kind of all I had to say. I think that was it. So I'll send it back to you, Pete. And this is KA3TEJ.
Excellent, excellent. Thanks for the comments. I think that emergency preparedness, I personally believe that it's not something that you do and then, put it on paper and set it aside and don't touch it until the emergency. I think emergency preparedness plans they're alive. They're things that are living. They evolve. They grow. At least I believe they should. Things change in your life. And so should your emergency preparedness plan. That should always follow you around and reflect the changes in your personal life, your family life, et cetera. My basic requirements, I like Charlotte's idea of FRS and GFRS radios. We have six of them here. We bought them for just us and the kids to keep in touch and play around and play spy and run around the farm and stuff. And they're quite useful, but I keep them in my go kit because they can be very useful in an emergency. My basic tenets is, first of all, take care of yourself, take care of your family. Make sure yourself and your family are safe, and then after that you hop on the radio and see what's happening in your neighborhood, of course. We practice escape routes in and around the house in case of a fire or other emergency. We have set meeting places for the family in case we get split up. We have a small amount of emergency food and water, although space is limited at the VE2 XBL studios, so we have a little bit of that, probably for about a day. There's five of us here, seven bodies if you count the two canines. I have a go kit, which includes HT, a list of emergency frequencies, various cables and adapters and things of that nature. And I've joined the ARIS team at our local club, which is working with our city on an emergency preparedness plan. So, yeah, always evolving. Those of you who are interested, I'll just pause here to recycle for one sec. Those of you who are interested, there's Saturday at 10 p.m. There's, I believe it's the Kentucky AriesNet on South Cars Conference. If you guys are interested in hearing what goes on, and they even invite people to join in and learn how to communicate. So we have our own little AriesNet right here on our home server. So there's no excuse for those of you who want to learn. So that's my two cents. Just see if there's any other comments on this subject, and I think we'll also make this the subject of another net one night, because that's a very, very important subject indeed. So if anybody has any final comments on emergency preparedness, come on aboard to South Cars TNT now.
Say my Charlie, Bravo.
KW4LCB, George, come on aboard.
Well, good evening again, Pete. You know, I always thought good to have laying around is a couple lengths of copper pipe and some copper wire, you know, and a good understanding of antennas. You know, it Mr. Six Victor's already kind of showed me you don't need a whole lot to talk, even a chain link fence. With the right basics could help you out quite a bit. So a little bit of investigation on frequency and, you know, SWR and how to tune a wire works wonders there. Just ought to throw that one in. KW4LCB, back to net control.
Hey, Roger that. Indeed, indeed. I agree. I'm presently transmitting through four lengths of 12-gauge wire, so no, indeed, you don't need a whole lot to make an antenna, and that's one of my pet projects. I love antennas. I think antennas are cool, and they're fun, and they can be easy to make, or they could be complicated to make, and we're going to have a show on antennas, too, just because I love antennas. And that'll be coming up hopefully before Christmas if I can get my act together. But that's besides the point. Thanks for your comments, George. Anybody else on the subject of emergency preparedness, come on aboard to South Cars TNT. All right, KD4OVI, we'll make Pete the final comment as we have reached the 92nd minute of our podcast, of our show here. So come on aboard, Pete, with final thoughts tonight. 84 OVI, welcome aboard.
Well, thank you for letting me be the anchor of the show here. I do appreciate that, Pete. So I'm going to be the anchor, and I'll haul up the anchor when I'm finished here. But anyway, the premise is that if you were to, in your location or wherever your location is, get to know your EOC, know what area, where the EOC is located at, and then when you do have a problem, you get familiar with their frequencies, and if you're outbound somewhere and they want to connect with you, you tell them you're available, And if you have any emergency traffic that you may want to handle from your neighborhood going back into the EOC, you're ready to go. And you know who you're going to talk to, and what subject matter is going to be, and how to procure a link into the EOC when you have an emergency coming up. So you can be like an anchor around your neighborhood, listen for problems, and if you have some injury or tree fall in the house or whatever emergency it is, you can relay that back to EOC and have the emergency crew come out and assist. And that's the basic concept of EOC anyway. You don't need to be part, you don't need to sit at the EOC handling traffic. You generate traffic for EOC to work on. And if you're the ears and eyes out there, you just report back to EOC what the problem is and sort of resolve the problem. And that's my comment, Pete, from KD4R, Quebec, India.
Hey, come on aboard, Gordon, with your comment.
Thank you, Pete. I know you're running out of time there, Tiger. I'll make it short. I just thought it would be interesting for everybody. You know, this is everything is a learning curve. It's not only learning the basics to start with, but it's improving on what you're currently working with. It was learned, and I thought that people would take particular note of this, it was learned that the VOIP digital communication in the form of links and repeaters was instrumental in really helping the Katrina situation. When that took place, there were a number of the local hams down there that had their Echo Link set up as a link. The RF guys who were out in the heat of the battle could communicate through that link directly to not only federal offices, but to ARRL for an overall informational in and out basis. So VOIP was standing pretty doggone strong in Katrina, and I have a hunch it's going to be standing tall in many days to come. Go ahead, Pete, from KY6V.
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Gordon. Yeah, indeed. VOIP, another subject we could spend a whole show on. VOIP, yay or nay. And I know there's a lot of naysayers out there, a lot of purists. It was the same thing with analog versus digital photography years ago. Digital photography was evil, but now, everything is digital. And I think it's the same with VOIP. There was a lot of naysayers in the beginning. But I think every technology has its good uses, and and SSB and AM also have their uses. Everything's got its place, and everything can be used, for good and for evil, of course. But we tend to use it for good, being ham radio operators. With that, I'm going to close the official portion of the net. We are presently at, 0207 Zulu. So we're 7 minutes past our target time, which is fine. This has been a fascinating subject. Our last thoughts on the subject of emergency preparedness. Go to the ARRL website, www.arrl.org, and they have a whole slew of documents, indeed, for emergency preparedness and RS. And that's where I've gotten a lot of my basic information. Yes, I go to the ARRL too, indeed. W4RFJ, what's the name of this net? This is the South Cars TNT Open Forum. TNT standing for Thursday Night Thematic Net. Of course, to our friends on the other side of the planet, it's actually the Friday Morning Thematic Net, but that's okay. I'm still going to call it the TNT because I think that's a cool name. And I actually realized today that this is a complete off-spot topic, but my dog's names are Tonka and Tyson, TNT. So there you go. It's another little off-topic plug there. Anyhow, Thursday night, thematic open forum. Thematic meaning that every Thursday there is a theme. We discuss a specific theme. And this Thursday we have discussed a number of themes. And I've only gotten through half my list, so we're definitely going to have to do this again. I'd planned on doing this the first Thursday of every month. Yes, thematic, pertaining to a theme. It's in the dictionary, I promise. Anyhow, let me pause for 1 second. All right, a few announcements. We need your input, guys. Guys and gals, send us your suggestions for topics of discussion on this open forum. Any and all topics of interest will be considered for discussion, of course. The next topic will be next Thursday. That will be Friday for you guys on the other side of the globe. And the presenter will be Clint Bradford, who is a newly a new member of South Cars. He became a member a few weeks ago, and we're happy to have him on board. And his topic, his call sign, K6LCS, and his topic will be working amateur satellites with your HT. Working amateur satellites with your HT. Yes, it is possible. I've heard this gentleman's presentation, and you guys, you are in for a real treat. Believe me, this gentleman knows how to present. He knows his stuff, and you guys will be amazed at how accessible it really is to communicate to a satellite. So I invite all y'all to come in huge, huge numbers, indeed. Let me pause. So also, if you have a skill or topic of interest that you want to present to the TNT community, please send us an email, and you can host your very own show on the South Cars TNT Open Forum. You can contact us at VOIP at southcars.com, and all details for these and other great nets on South Cars can be found at www.voip.southcars.com. With that, I will bring the net to a close officially. I will be sticking around for a little bit longer, and I invite anybody to carry on in the discussions. I think I'm going to try this type of net again on the first Thursday of next month, and we'll see if we can complete the list and come up with a few new topics. And again, if you guys have suggestions, please shoot us an email. I will repeat for Pete's sake. The next topic will be Clint Bradford, K6LCS, working amateur satellites with your HT. So hats off to all you guys for being there, and I'm glad to have you aboard, and I'm glad to be aboard too. I'm having a blast, and I think these nets are fun, and I'm learning more than you guys most likely. So with that, I'll say 73s to all. Let me just have a last glance of my slew of papers here to make sure I haven't forgotten to give you guys any information that I should, and it does not seem so. So at 22:11, I bring this net to a close, and we will see you guys next week on the Thursday night thematic open forum. 73s, y'all.